Welcome back to Empty Frames. I'm Tim, here today with Lance in the Crawl Space Studios in Wormtown. Lance, how are you today?
Tim, I don't even know where I am right now. This is Empty Frames, season three? No? This is Empty Frames special episode?
Yeah, it's a bonus episode. Consider this a bonus episode. This was something that we intended to air in Empty Frames season three, but we decided to air it on one of our other shows called Crawl Space instead. So check out Crawl Space if you don't listen to that already. But so this episode aired on Crawl Space a couple of months ago, and we figured we might as well bring it to our Empty Frames audience because it does have to do with art, and it is a real interesting mystery, I'd say.
Yeah, and we want to make sure that our Empty Frames audience knows that this show is still alive and kicking. It's been a little bit of a break between season two and where we're at right now. We actually wanted to do a season on haunted paintings, allegedly haunted paintings, and speak to people who experienced that, which is why we interviewed this great artist, Bill Stoneham, about his haunted painting, The Hands Resist Him. Found a needle in a haystack with this one right off the bat. It's a great interview. He's a great artist. The painting's super creepy, and we thought that that concept had legs. Turns out, not a lot of people want to talk about their haunted paintings, and it's very hard to find them.
It is, but this interview is a lot of fun. We talked to Bill Stoneham, who is an amazing artist and really just a fun guy to talk to and has a great sense of humor about his quote-unquote haunted painting.
And it's really cool to look at the body of work he has at stonehamstudios.com. All of his paintings do have a bit of a touch of the macabre, if you will. And I think he counters that darkness with this great sense of humor that you'll hear in this interview. He's a really cool guy.
And the painting is called The Hands Resist Him, and it's sort of known through the internet folklore as being haunted. And Bill has actually done a couple other paintings in the Hands Resist Him series, so you can check those out at stonehamstudios.com. He's got its own tab, the Hands Resist Him tab.
And I think we've talked about this painting long enough, because if you talk about it for too long, you yourself will become cursed.
You will die, actually.
As a matter of fact, after you look at this painting, you will die.
Okay, everybody. Thanks a lot for listening.
And stay tuned for season three of Empty Frames, to be heard wherever you find podcasts sometime soon.
And we are being joined by Bill Stoneham, painter of a really incredible painting called The Hands Resist Him. How are you, Bill?
Good.
Just wanted to thank you for taking the time out of your day to join us here on Empty Frames. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the podcast. It's cool if you're not.
No, it's not.
It's not cool. No. The first season of Empty Frames was about the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum heist. The second season was about other art crimes and sort of significant moments in art culture. And this season, we're gearing more towards a little bit of the ethereal, supernatural aspect, and you have this painting that Tim referenced called The Hands Resist Him. This is an incredible painting. This has an incredible story.
Yes.
Yes.
And can you start with why you painted it and the story of how it was painted?
Well, at the time, I was living in, well, actually, the story goes, before I painted it, it goes to going down to La Cienega in Beverly Hills and walking into a gallery there with my portfolio and showing my portfolio to the gallery manager. And then some months later, while painting in my Quonset hut up in Newbury Park, and I mean, Quonset hut looks like half a can of peaches, right, on its side. And this is where I'm living and painting, and he comes driving up in his Mercedes and jumps out of the car and comes up into the Quonset hut, and he buys every, with the exception of maybe a couple of paintings, he buys everything I have. And then he signs me up for a 2-year contract to paint for him. And with that contract, I was then, actually some other circumstances gave me the opportunity to buy a house out in Ojai. And I moved out there with my first wife, and this place was quite dark and had a lot of, ghosts. I mean, the whole canyon was filled with ancient fossil beds and 800-year-old oak trees, and the house was an old stage stop between Santa Barbara and Ventura before there was a coastal road at all. And so it had all of these memories and spirits, whatever, that were there. And as a painter, I'm sort of like a canary in a coal mine. I mean, I'm sensitive to what's going on around me in the, you know, in the presence of things, in nature, in whatever. And would pick up on this, and it would influence what I was painting or work.
Sorry, it's happening already. The weird things are happening. We another call came through, and I panicked and hit the wrong button and hung up on us.
Well, I guess we could keep my responses to yes or no.
Oh, no. This was going great. Sorry about that. Yeah. Strange. That's never happened before. I usually know what button to hit when that happens, but I lost my mind for a second.
Well, it's because it's all haunted, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's possession.
Yeah.
Well, there's like a vortex over this island, and your connection to me is tenuous at best here.
Oh.
Really?
Now, so you're reporting.
Yeah, of course, everything I'm painting it also causes a disturbance in the quantum entangled world that we live in.
Love it.
My God, I love where this is going already, Bill.
What are we doing?
So,
this is great.
Wait a second. So can you tell us where you're speaking to us now from?
Yes, it was Vashon Island. Actually, to be accurate, it's Maury Island.
Maury Island.
And Maury Island is it's in Puget Sound. So it's all, it's right near. It's actually kind of between Tacoma and Seattle.
Okay.
All right. Sounds like a beautiful place, especially this time of year.
Oh, yeah. It is.
And you go there for inspiration, or that's where you live?
No, we live here. We live on a beautiful 3-acre forest meadow piece of property.
Cool. We'll be there next week.
Okay. I'll be sure to have the camera operating on the ferry dock to, you know.
Okay.
Beautiful.
Perfect.
So,
to give you the proper welcome.
Appreciate it. So before the spirits interrupted our conversation, you were talking about how you were in a place where there was a lot of, I guess we could say, supernatural baggage that you were being affected by.
Yeah.
Yeah. Continue on with that. That's super interesting.
Well, Ojai itself is known for its, I don't know what, spiritual energy, I guess is what you'd call it.
Okay.
There's a really old institution there called the Theosophical Society. And in the library there were only 4 copies of this book, and it was Manly Hall's Secret Teachings of All Ages. And I had a copy of this book, not one of the originals, of course, but I had a reprint of it that was probably reprinted in the late 60s. And that was something I always had around, and Thoreau's Dictionary of Symbols. He was a Spanish author who did some interpretive work on symbology and so forth. And,
mm-hmm.
and I had books, texts like this around. So between those books and I also did a lot of Tarot. Between all of those kinds of activities, these kind of metaphysical things that I was involved in, painting was a form of magic, because it was conjuring.
Yeah.
And it was not only conjuring, but it was also creating the illusion of space and time. Because if you look at my paintings, most of my paintings are so filled with motion, and more so than the Hands Resist Him. I mean, the Hands Resist Him is actually pretty mild compared to a lot of what I paint.
Okay.
And it's a still frame in a moment in time. And if you, in other words, if you become involved in it as a viewer, you will begin to see what's coming next, or you will imagine what's coming next, or what came previously. So this is what I'm trying to do with my painting, and I don't necessarily always consciously think about it when I'm painting, but what I want is I want the viewer to fill in the spaces. I want you engaged in what you're looking at, and my painting, I hope, will pull you in, and then you create the rest of the story.
That sounds really cool. Have you had any formal training, or is this all self-taught?
This is all off, you know, I wouldn't say off the top of my head necessarily, but more inside. But, I mean, I had 2 years of college and had a, you know, an associate degree. And in those 2 years, I majored in art. So I took, you know, basic painting courses and so forth. So I understood the principles of color and color theory and that kind of thing. And also art history, took art history courses. But beyond that, no, I had no art school training. I couldn't afford it, for one thing.
Well, if your goal is to allow the viewer to fill in the spaces and, you know, enjoy looking at your work, I think you've really struck a chord here, Bill, because the hands resist them is incredibly disturbing.
You painted something back in 1972, which is frequently called the most haunted painting in the world. Where does the story of this start for you?
Well, the story, you mean the story of my contact with this phenomena of the painting?
Yeah, well, how did you...
The
painting itself, where did that come from?
Because you obviously conjured evil. Just
kidding. The basic idea for the painting came from an old photo of myself standing in front of my grandmother's apartment in Chicago when I was 5 years old, and standing there with a neighbor girl, a little girl. And that was it. It was you know, an old black and white photograph that had faded. And I mean, I'll describe it to you.
Please.
The old photo, my 5-year-old self and the neighbor girl poised on the threshold to the apartment, smudged and brown with age, was pinned to the canvas frame, propped on the easel, ready for paint. The studio located above the high water had been the stage stop between Ventura and Santa Barbara before the coast highways. Surrounded by ancient oaks, roosts for owls and bats, my imagination conceived and my brushes delivered. You know, so I had this old photo from the family album, and that was the initial inspiration. Well, actually, the other part of the inspiration, because the title came from a poem that my wife had written at the time. And the title of the poem was The Hands Resistant. Now, she's referring to the conflict within me as an only child and not knowing who my parents were because I was adopted. So she sees that as a connection between the real world of your tactile self with your hands and the world that is in your head, you know, and the connection between the head and the hand. How do you make that connection and keep it active and alive?
Right.
And it was, you know, and because I was already in this dark place, you know, and this was 1972. So there was a lot going on in the world at the time, the Vietnam War and all of that involvement. I mean, I was a young man. I was eligible for the draft and all of that. So there was a lot going on that brought darkness into not only my own life, but lives around me. The hands resist him. Resistance was something else, you know. I mean, resistance was real.
Right. And do you still have that photo?
I was pretty active, actually, in that and ended up serving some federal probation behind it.
What? Like you were, you protested the war and you were arrested?
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
Nice.
Amazing.
Yeah, I was sentenced to 3 years, and then they suspended sentence and put me on probation.
Jeez.
Good Lord. Okay, so...
But it was, you know, this was a passionate time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
Okay.
And
so
my painting was dark, and I was never going to get away from that. That was just part of who I was.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like I was like the canary in the coal mine. I was pulling in all the toxic stuff that we had in our own society. I mean, as a painter, you're like that. You're a barometer. You can feel the weather change, and on an unconscious level. And because of that, I was feeling that darkness in our world and pulling it into my work.
Now, do you still have that original photo?
Boy, I wish. No, it's in a landfill in Mendocino.
Well, I
moved around a lot.
Yeah.
It sounds like you have it in explicit detail in your head, though, because you described it very eloquently.
There's other photos in the album that are of the same, from the same time period. So.
Okay, so you said that you always have a lot of darkness that's involved in your artwork, and there was a lot of passion going on at the time, and there was a deeper meaning to the word resist. So when you painted this, were you intending it to be as unsettling as it turned out to be?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. There's no
mission accomplished.
Yeah, that was something that was, that was always there. Everything I painted, I was influenced a lot by what I read at the time too. And one of the things I was reading at the time was, and this is maybe laughable now, but Carlos Castaneda's The Teachings of Don Juan, and this is his. Anthropology, I think it was his anthropology doctorate paper at UCLA, and he wrote about the Yaqui Indian Don Juan and about his way of knowledge. And his way of knowledge involved using things like Datura and psilocybin and that kind of thing. And the ideas that Don Juan talks about, he talked about that the unknown and the power of life and death was something that was so present, always, instantaneously around us at all times, that Carlos, this, kind of bumbling character from what he perceived, his own perception of a civilized world, was suddenly plunged into this world of supernatural belief and powerful hallucinogens. And I experienced that.
Yes.
I went out to the desert, experienced it. And when it happened for me, it was eye-opening is the least of it.
Tell us.
It was profoundly changing because it pulls you right down into the earth and pushes you back out again through some plant somewhere.
Oh, I love
it. Or some animal.
Where are we going with this?
Yeah,
this is great.
And where'd you go, the Mojave?
Well, you wanted to know.
We regret nothing. Where'd you go, the Mojave or Joshua Tree, or where'd you go to experience this?
Actually, Mojave was one of them, but I lived in the desert for a while, too. I lived outside of a little town called Hesperia.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Which is in the Apple Valley area, I think is the bigger region. Anyway, it's high desert. And
in more ways than one.
Yeah, right, exactly, more ways than one. But, the experiences I had there, and this was when I was 20, really kind of influenced everything visually for me for many years and still does.
You were quoted as saying the hands in the painting were all of the possibilities. What are the possibilities?
Well, the possibilities are it's because the hands have more than one meaning. I mean, the hands are both, as was intended in Rohan's poem, was the possibilities of who my family might have been. Or who they were. So they were the ghosts of those possibilities, like siblings. I mean, the doll represented, in a sense, my missing sibling. And we can talk about that, too, because that ends up in the sequel paintings that I did. That, in other words, that story evolves with those paintings. But anyway, in that original, in the original Hands Resistant. The hands also represented the conflict in myself between what I can create and what I can imagine and how well I can carry it off. How much control do I really have over my own hand and brush?
Do you apply that method of thinking and creating to everything that you paint?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's like it's kind of a lucid dream.
Yeah,
painting is so different from. I mean, I gave up painting for 10 years when I worked at Lucas and was doing digital and feature film stuff, because the computer and digital animation and 3D modeling and all of that kind of thing is, I'm telling you, it is like getting hooked on heroin. I mean, it is so powerful. You can create anything you can imagine. And you can put it in a realistic setting, so convincing that you can't tell it from the real. And so, you know, that was so compelling to me that I set aside my brushes and paints for 10 years because I didn't have space in my head to be able to do both. And it's because as simply as the act of having a mouse in my hand and looking at the screen, I disconnected from my hand. I was no longer looking at it, right? I'm now looking at the screen, and my hand is over to the side here moving and making, you know, doing the work on the screen, but it's not connected anymore. It's so different from holding a brush in your hand. I mean, you're now suddenly in a beta state of mind instead of an alpha state of mind. You're when you're working in the computer, you're almost in a unconscious state because of that disconnection between hand and eye.
Damn. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to use the mouse on my computer the same way again.
Yes, that innocent little mouse is not your friend.
Now, okay, so there's a whole history and a legend with this painting. Can you start telling us about where it went after you painted it and where the legend, I guess, started?
Well, that's interesting. That was the painting. The last time I physically saw the painting was at the gallery, Charles Feingarten Galleries, at the night of my show, which was in December of 1974. So he had a one-man show for me. So the gallery was filled with my work. By that point, he had collected 54 canvases, and so he had he had the paintings up, and the hands was hanging in a kind of a side wall off the main area of the gallery, and I was there with my first wife Roanne, and she and I were walking around the gallery and looking at the work and looking at the people looking at the work, and I noticed this guy standing in front of the painting. And I recognized him immediately as an actor, character actor. And it was, what's his name? God.
Is it John
Marley?
John Marley.
And, I recognized him from the Godfather movie.
And I just want to interject here. John Marley played the character in the Godfather movie, the Hollywood mogul producer, who wakes up with the horse's head in his bed, which just adds to the whole grotesque legend.
And I learned later that he was working, and I don't remember the name of the movie, but he was working on one of those Roger Corman-type horror movies at the time that he was looking
at
the painting.
Of course he was. Yeah.
So, I saw him looking at it, and then we walked up the street to go look at another gallery where an old friend of mine, Leon Salter, who was a relative of my stepfather, and who was an amazing painter, very classic kind of German expressionist stuff. And so we went to the gallery to look at his work. And then I think about a week later, I was in contact with Feingarten and discovered that the only painting that had sold in the show was that one. And so I assumed that it had been purchased by Marley.
Okay.
So, and that was it. That was the last time I ever saw the painting. And then in 2001, I was contacted by Kim Smith, who, well, anyway, so I get an email from, I'm in Meade, Washington, working at Cyan, which is a company that created the game Myst. And I'm working there as one of their artists, and I get this email, and it says, "Do you know the hands resist him?" You know, and that was cool.
Yeah.
It was like, that's all it said. Do you know the hands resist him? And I responded back. I said, yeah, that's the title of a poem and also the title of a painting that I painted in 1972. And then I get a response back with the link to the eBay auction page. So I go to the link, and scrolling up the screen is the blown up image of my 5-year-old self from the painting. And it gave me chills seeing my own image like that, mm-hmm. You know, scrolling up the screen. You know, in 2000, things weren't quite as pervasive on the with the internet and everything that they are now. And so this, everything was kind of a little bit new. And a new experience. So anyway, I'm seeing this image scrolling up the page, and then I get into, you know, reading the rest of the article and seeing what they're talking about here and claiming the painting's haunted and showing that silly image of the painting backlit. I mean, the canvas is thin, the paint's thin. Of course, if you shine a light through the back, it's going to look strange. Yeah, I mean, that was a gimmick on their part. I'm not going to buy that it was, you know, represented anything supernatural.
But in that version where they did that, it looked like the little girl in the painting was holding a gun. Am I mistaken? Was that the version of that?
Yeah, that's not a gun. That's not a gun. It's a poorly painted edge of the frame of the door intersecting a dry cell battery she's holding in her hands.
Bill, it was not poorly painted.
This is
your work is incredible, by the way. I am blown away by all of it, including the sequels and everything else you've done. It's all very dark and really super interesting.
Yeah, we're going to get back to the painting in a second, but we were just looking at one of the sequels here, and it looks like you have a painting where you're looking from inside the room out at the two characters.
That's right.
Yeah,
right,
that's
right.
Incredible.
That was a sequel to Zach Bagans, who
the Ghost
a
Hunter guy?
Ghost Adventures.
Oh, okay, yep.
Yeah, so Zach commissioned that painting. And the way I work with a commission first of all, he wanted me to redo Hands Resist Him. And I said, no, I won't do that. I'm not going to make an exact copy of something I've already done, but I'll do a sequel to it. And I said, I'll tell you what, since I've already done two sequels, one being myself at the age of about 53, and the second one being a projection into the future of me at 100, I'll do one that was before. So I'm doing a prequel.
Nice.
So that painting is the prequel. And the title of that one is Hands Invent Him.
Hands
so
Invent Him. Nice.
It's me inside the foyer of my grandmother's apartment building, looking out through the front door and seeing myself in silhouette there with the doll.
Right.
Standing on the porch.
So what you're looking at is the scene from The Hands Resist Him. So it's you and the little girl doll that's standing right there. So that's
right.
Really compelling.
And actually that addresses another question you had about hauntings in work, whether there's any, you know, evidence or people talking about being haunted by it. And that painting was definitely haunted. I mean, working with Zach, I didn't communicate with him on a daily basis at all, but when I'm working on a painting, it's as if the painting is is a little bit of a doorway between his consciousness and mine. So I'm working on something that he has in his head, and I perceive it and paint it. So, for instance, in that painting, there's this old tricycle. And the tricycle has a, you know, one of those old bells, right? Those little hand crank bells on the handlebar. I kept hearing that sound. And I told Zach after I sent him the painting, you know, I told him, because he hadn't seen the painting, right? He didn't know what he was getting. And I told him, I said, do you happen to have a tricycle in your collection of haunted things? And he said, yeah, we're going to install it. And he said, as soon as he got the painting, he started hearing that ching, ching, ching. And some of the things that are in that painting are actually things that I was experiencing while painting it. So I had an invasion of rats come through the wall of my studio while I was working on that painting. And talk about creeping, creeping you out.
An invasion of rats.
Yeah, I had these five rats come through the wall of my studio. What had happened is I had rats, when I remodeled the studio was an old two-car garage, and it was all run down and infested with rats and all kinds of things. So when I remodeled it and everything, it, you know, displaced these rat families and their generations of occupation. So they wanted back in, and they were always working on how to get back into the studio. And they managed to get into the interior wall between the sheetrock and the outside. And then I had a guy come and you know, inspect and solve my rat issue. Well, he blocked them in without realizing it. So these rats are now inside the wall. They can't get back out. So they start chewing their way through the sheetrock. And they come right into the room, five of them, and they're inside the studio, and they're getting behind my paintings. And, I mean, it was just a complete freak out. And I, you know, I kind of did a Freddy Krueger on them and went crazy.
wait.
Whoa.
Yeah, what do you mean there? You went into their dreams, or you just, like, yelled at them?
The rats were in my studio. They were invading my space, and so I eliminated them.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Can we commission you to paint something for us called the Rats Resist Him?
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Okay. So what happened to John Marley? There's a whole series of events that happen to people after they look at or purchase your painting that could be lined up as, you know, hey, people die. What do you make of what's happened since then? What happened to John Marley?
That would be a question for Greg Gibbs, who's making the documentary.
Yep, great.
Because he researched all of that in depth.
Great.
Much more than I have. So he probably knows all the details, if there are any to know, about John Marley.
Call that a teaser in the biz.
Yeah. I've had, of course, all kinds of things over the years. People have, wanting to know about the painting and what it means, and commenting on it, and sending me emails and queries. Some of them crazy, some of them pretty innocent, and some of them trying to convince me that I need to be saved.
Right. Saved.
Right. So you're obviously possessed by some sort of demon. I mean, I can hear it in your voice.
All right. I'm going to read you a response I gave to this one young man named Dominic. Dominic, I'm curious as to who you are. You've gleaned something from my online presence to query my spiritual well-being. So tell me something about you. You ask, why even send your initial email? Why indeed? The hands resist him. Is the bioluminescent lure dangling from the jaws of my abyssal nightmares. They are quite content at such depths, weightless, eyeless, blind to the possibilities, but pull them to the surface and gaff them onto the deck of your pilgrim's vessel, and they suffocate, transformed from my nightmare into your catch of the day, boneless, headless, meaningless. I prefer the pain of drowning in a sea of possibilities, the salvation in a desert of certainty.
What are you, an artist or something?
Jesus, can I get a response like that?
Yeah, what the hell is this guy talking about?
Jesus, okay. this guy...
Sometimes it clicks sometimes, you know, when they ask me, when they query me about my spiritual well-being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wish you would have seen our faces over here as you were reading that to us. That is a response that if I ever get that response back in an email, I'd close my email account and say that's it.
I quit the internet.
There's nothing more. I quit the internet.
Well, I can actually be pretty short with people. I mean, I had this one, and I apologize to him if he happens to be listening, but one young man queried me about the painting and whether it was haunted and all of that, and I said, it certainly is. And I said, you know what? If you've looked at it, you're going to die.
Jesus.
No, you didn't, Bill.
That's amazing. Well, actually, Bill,
that's
you're not.
That's hilarious.
I did.
And you're not lying.
And it's totally true.
Totally true.
Yeah.
Whether they look at my painting or a carton of milk, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's incredible. Anyway. That's incredible. Now, there's some accounts of people looking at the painting and they start to feel nauseous or dizzy. As Tim and I have been doing these shows, The Empty Frames Season 1 and 2, we've heard a lot of accounts of people looking at any piece of art and feeling nauseous or dizzy.
No, only good art.
Good art and feeling sick to their stomach. It's being attributed to the hands resist him, and now that's part of the whole folklore is that you can't even look at this thing without feeling nauseous or dizzy, but it's got like a million views. It's got like a million views online. I printed out part of it last night.
And then he died.
And I'm speaking from beyond the grave right now.
Well, you have this is a very clear connection.
A lot of technical work to go into that.
Let me summon Sharon in the boat, and I'll be over in a minute.
So, I mean, do you think that this is, did you, I guess I'm trying to say, hop on board with all this? It sounds like you're kind of having a little bit of fun with it when people reach out to you and inquire.
I can't help but have a little bit of fun with it. I mean, part of the initial response to it was, was in the same category as seeing Elvis in a stain on the wall inside the gas station urinal or, grilled cheese Madonnas. I mean, it was kind of the same, within the same realm to me initially. And then I had this fascinating interview with a DJ at a Texas radio station. And the radio station held a contest for a story about the listeners' stories about the painting and their reaction to it. And the winner of the contest would get an exact reproduction of the painting. In other words, an actual size, et cetera. And I had something like 80 plus stories. And I read through them all. I'm telling you, I didn't realize what this painting had done to these folks down in Texas. I mean, it was really eye opening how disturbed people could get.
What did they say?
Yeah, well, do you have a couple of examples?
Well, a lot of it. The main gist of it was drunken abuse. In other words, the child was an abused child. And the hands were, I don't know what, the imprisonment or the confinement of this, of the abuse. So anyway, they were very disturbing. And the one that I picked, the winner, was actually one that was written from the point of view of the painting.
Oh, wow.
Looking out at the viewers. And it was written by a young girl. I think she was about 19 at the time.
That's interesting that you picked the one that wasn't dark and she had the, I guess, the wherewithal to go with something that was against the grain, in regarding this painting.
Well, right. I would have to imagine that as the artist of the painting, you didn't create it thinking, oh, this is going to really creep people out and I'm going to be on a radio show in Texas and everyone's going to tell me how afraid they are of this painting. Like, you didn't do that, I'm sure, like, unless I'm incorrect.
No, this was all an amazing phenomena from a single event, you know, an auction.
What was it doing? It was found abandoned in a California brewery. Did I miss something? How did it get there?
Well, that's where Greg Gibbs comes in. You know, he's gonna be able to fill in all those blanks on its history.
Okay.
After it left the gallery.
Okay, cool.
I think it was originally a brewery, and it had been turned into studio spaces. And it was in one of those studios.
Okay.
And I don't know whether it was abandoned or it was simply just set aside and picked up by someone who purchased the space.
I couldn't imagine walking into a, like, if I had purchased that space and I walked in and I was cleaning it out and I found that painting, I don't know what I'd do. I mean, I think that would be, I'd be definitely intrigued.
But you'd have to be thinking about it in these terms, and that is, did you know about the painting beforehand?
Yeah, true.
I mean, the thing is that the painting certainly has a lot of story attached to it now, which it didn't have then. So, you know, it would have been an interesting piece of art, and you probably wouldn't have noticed the fact that there were hands in it at all, initially.
Right.
Those are details that you only see after looking at it for a while.
I love how paintings have their own life and own, plot points. This is really amazing. So it was found at this California brewery, and then what happened?
Well, and then the owners, I mean, the people who got it, I'm just remembering bits and pieces from the eBay auction page information, but they had it hanging in their kid's bedroom, which I thought was a strange place to hang that painting to begin with.
Yeah,
that seems normal.
And that their children complained that the boy and the girl fought with each other. They would come out of the painting at night and fight with each other.
Yeah, but okay. This is a 4-year-old kid that's saying this, right?
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, I mean,
to be
that's why it's strange to hang that painting in their bedroom. I mean.
Yeah.
And to be
let's give our kids neuroses right from the beginning.
I mean, I can imagine that there were a number of other paintings that they could have hung in their 4-year-old's bedroom.
A little more innocent, perhaps.
Maybe.
As the parent of a 4.5-year-old right now, I can say that she's got a big owl hanging in her her room.
What are you trying to do to your kid, Tim?
It's a cartoon owl.
Well, yeah.
Not creepy.
My daughter grew up with a drac. You know what a drac is from the movie Enemy Mine?
No.
It's an old movie. It's a movie from the 80s, 1985.
With Dennis Quaid.
But it was... Yeah, exactly. Dennis Quaid and Lou Gossett.
Lou Gossett Jr., yeah. Yep.
He was the drac. Anyway, I had because I worked on the movie, and I sculpted some of the faces, some of the drac faces. I had one on, you know, like a trophy, like a deer head, hanging on the wall in the hallway on the way to my daughter's bedroom. And she was only... I don't even think she wasn't even 2 at the time. And she would say goodnight to it on her way to bed.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, she was polite to it, and I'm sure she continued on to be a very well-rounded, balanced person.
Right. But what I'm saying is she grew up around monsters.
Don't we all?
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
certainly that's true of the folks in Texas when they write about the hands resistant.
We'll read the that eBay ad probably in the intro, but I just want to just read a quick thing. They place the eBay ad for the hands resistant, and then they have this warning, and it says, "Do not bid on this painting if you are susceptible to stress related disease, faint or of heart, or unfamiliar with supernatural events." And then it this painting may or may not possess supernatural powers that could impact or change your life. it reads like a like the disclaimers on one of those commercials for an anxiety pill or irritable bowel syndrome that you see on TV.
Yeah.
And it goes through all these things and you're like, well, I'll just have irritable bowel syndrome.
Yeah. No thanks.
Yeah, and then they actually say that the point of this was to ask if anyone out there on eBay knows how to bless a house because they felt like their whole house was...
Right.
Yeah, the point of selling this painting on eBay is to bless the house.
That was the purpose of of saying those things in the ad. But apparently, we're going to try to get these people on to see the actual footage from the motion detector, the still images that show the kids coming out of the...
Spoiler alert, Lance.
We need a whole season here.
There's no footage. Spoiler alert. Have you ever seen...
They turn the camera on and there's nothing happens, right?
Now, had you seen any of that footage or any of those pictures or anything?
No.
No.
I have not had... The only connection I've got with any of this background story on this is through Greg.
Okay.
And his research.
What was your reaction as you were getting all of this information? So Greg is the independent filmmaker... And he's researched this, and he starts telling you all of this stuff. Does your anxiety start to grow, or is it just are you amused by it?
Well, I kind of got into it. I mean, one of the things that Greg did was over the last 4 months or so is I've provided him with a whole background of information on my childhood, on my painting, and all of that stuff. So he's assured me that he's creating a very well-rounded film about not just the Hands Resistant, but about me and the background of my work.
Very cool. Yeah.
So, so the side story, of course, is all the hoopla and marketing on the part of the folks who put it up for auction.
Right. And to be clear, I'm not saying the painting is not haunted. I'm just saying those people, those people who posted the eBay ad and, freak their child out. Like there's something going on there that I don't necessarily trust.
Yeah, there's paintings that are much more disturbing than that one in my collection. That's for sure.
You don't say.
There is something amazing.
I have had people... all over the world buy my work because of it, which is significant.
For sure.
It's beautiful. The associations with people I have never met and yet will send me thousands of dollars for work, for paintings. And we never see each other. We never meet each other. I had a woman in Russia buy two paintings from me that were pretty disturbing. And, it was kind of significant that someone in Russia bought them, and she told me a little bit of background. She said that it was because of her son that she bought the two paintings. And just having that kind of, having those kinds of things happen because of the very fact that the Hands Resistant became such a popular internet phenomenon.
Yeah.
That she was able to, because of that, I had a website and met the beautiful woman that I'm married to now. And she built the website for me. And because of all of that, I had all of these connections grew from that.
Well, it sounds like you're taking all of the goodwill and basically sucking the souls out of everyone else. So you have this wonderful existence.
Come on now, isn't that the nature of capitalism to suck the soul out of everything?
Wow, you are hitting a lot of points here.
There's a lot packed into this into this episode right now. So it sounds like you do not regret painting this.
Mm-mm. No, I have no regrets whatsoever.
Good. Nor should you. Where is it now? Where is the painting located now?
It's in Grand Rapids, Michigan, in the Perception Gallery, and I think Kim keeps it locked in a basement.
Is that out of demand? With, like too many people want to come see it, or she's
afraid?
Cloves
of garlic and crucifixes and things all over the wall.
Thing reeks like sage by this point.
Yeah.
Tim keeps it. He keeps it at the gallery in its own space. He gets people coming to, you know, wanting to see it, and so he, you know, kind of takes them on a tour.
Oh, great!
And he'll take it out once in a while when people ask for it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Or actually, I think he brings them down into the basement, you know, and a little spooky music and all that.
Yeah.
I have not seen the painting.
What would that be like for you?
I
have not physically been in the presence of my work.
Are you scared?
Since 1974.
Are you saying you're terrified to see your own work again?
You're totally afraid.
Well, I do have an exact reproduction of it.
Okay.
That Kim had made and sent to me.
But so, not haunted, or it is?
Well, you know, it's peripherally haunted. Haunted on, you know, on off Tuesdays of every 10th year.
That's why we're doing this on a Wednesday, because just had a gut
feeling. Yeah, thank God.
Yeah. Well, I think Tim and I are going to make a trip out there to Grand Rapids and tempt fate as we typically do.
We did discuss it, but then we also said that we don't want our plane to crash on the way home.
That's why I'm walking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you don't want that. I mean, just moving the print from one place to the other caused the truck I was in to break down. You know, it's kind of like Indiana Jones and the Ark inside the crate. It's burning through the symbol of the Third Reich on the outside of the box.
I feel like the mystical and supernatural energy coming from the painting is sort of wearing away, because the only thing it's done so far is just disconnected the call 7 minutes in. So I think we're in the clear.
Right.
Well, but we don't know what's going to happen when people listen to it.
That's true. Don't listen to this episode if you've gone this far.
Wait, that works against us.
Oh, wait, sorry, yeah.
Listen to the episode. And then tell us if something happened to you.
Check in with us after. So you yourself have never experienced anything that you can directly relate to it other than the truck breaking down.
Well, yeah, I mean the emails I was constantly getting from folks who were querying about it was kind of like a constant phenomena.
So you were haunted by
like
emails,
tapping on the window,
right?
Know, those disembodied hands.
Okay, and right. And what about the other one? So you said that there was a one sequel that was
There's three sequels. One we already talked about, which was the one for the actual prequel. Mm-hmm. For Zach, and then the two others that were commissioned by the same collector, and he wanted me to do them specifically with the first sequel. Resistance at the Threshold was myself at the time, so that was I was 53 at the time, and then the third one, which was Threshold of Revelation, and all three of the paintings, the original and the two sequels, have to do with the fact that I never knew who my parents were or whether I had siblings. And in fact, I did. I had a sister who I discovered while I was painting. It started painting the third sequel there, Threshold of Revelation, where suddenly the doll is no longer a doll, but an actual living child.
Oh, yeah.
And she's holding the remnants of the doll.
Uh-huh.
And so it's the revelation that I actually did have a sibling. And she was alive and well and living in Massachusetts. And we met each other, and it was amazing. And she, I have eight nieces and nephews now. And you know, a whole line of folks who I'm related to.
Very cool.
But she was put up for adoption just as I was. Right after being born.
Wow.
We were 2 years apart. Same mother and father, but we were 2 years apart. And
wow.
So there was. That's what I mean about painting. Sometimes painting is a conjuring.
Sure.
You know, it's a manifestation of something that did happen, will happen.
Yeah, I love that. And I think you're absolutely right when you say painting is a form of magic because it has no bounds of time and space. And I think you're right. People can transform through artwork and specifically paintings and your paintings. They're incredible, Bill.
I know. Any silence on our part is because we're currently like scrolling through all of your paintings right now. So you currently still produce artwork and you take commissions. If anybody is interested in this, where can they find your work and how can they contact you?
They can contact me through my website.
And I just want to give the website name. It's stonemstudios.com.